Hi there. Welcome to The Preventable, the podcast giving you a seat at the table with conversations about the intersection of alcohol, drugs, and mental health in everyday lives. Take a seat and join us.
Welcome to The Preventable. With me today is an esteemed guest, the assistant special agent in charge at the DEA here in St. Louis, Mr. Colin Dickey. Welcome to The Preventable.
Well, thank you for having me, Nicole. I really appreciate the chance and the opportunity to come on here and talk to you about DEA and what we're doing with DEA and what we're trying to do to target fentanyl drug distribution in our communities and target overdose-related drug deaths, too.
So I want to get into what the DEA does, what it doesn't do, because I think there's a lot of sometimes like misunderstanding about what your charge is and isn't. And I also, though, before we get there, like I want to just learn a little bit about you. So how long have you been in the DEA? Did you always want to do this? Is this kind of new for you? Or were you like one of those kids that were like, that's going to be me when I'm older?
I got into law enforcement. So I grew up in a small town in southern Illinois, 5,000 people. My dad was a fireman and ended up being a fire chief for over 30 years with a local volunteer fire department. So I knew I always wanted to do something in public service. Mm-hmm. And my dad wasn't afraid to run into burning buildings. That's not something I wanted to do. So I went the career path of law enforcement. And I knew I wanted to do it at an early age. Like I did a book report on the FBI in seventh grade, and I did a speech.
Okay.
I did a speech on it when I was in my sophomore year in college on the FBI and what it meant to me. Obviously, I ended up with the DEA, but it's still obviously in the federal law enforcement realm, and I couldn't be happier with the career decision that I made. I've been on with DEA for 18 years now. My career started in 2004 after I graduated the DEA Academy in Quantico, Virginia. My first assignment was in the Chicago Field Division. Hmm. I was there for 14 years. I did 10 years as an agent, working violent street gangs, southwest border investigations targeting criminal drug networks.
Wow.
And Mexican drug cartels.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I promoted to a group supervisor level in 2014 to our financial investigations group, where I conducted money laundering investigations.
Ooh.
throughout the world, which was fascinating. It was something completely different than what I did.
Okay,
for my 10 years as an agent.
To talk about cryptocurrency, because I am so perplexed by it.
Yeah.
And I've gone down a few rabbit holes trying to figure it out. So maybe we'll have you back to talk about that.
No, absolutely. And it's a whole nother thing, right? Because when I was an agent, a baby agent, cut my teeth, cryptocurrency didn't even exist.
Yeah.
So as I promote through this agency, new trafficking and trends.
Oh, sure.
and methods that drug traffickers and money launderers use comes up, and it's hard for me as a supervisor to get trained on that stuff. So I have to really rely on my agent and supervisor personnel that I supervise in order to get up to speed on that.
Mm.
But it's a huge thing, and I would love to be back to talk
yeah.
to you about that. So I did my time as a group supervisor of the financial investigations group from 2014 to 2018. After that, I was selected for a lateral position in our Bogota, Colombia country
mm-hmm.
office
mm-hmm.
as a group supervisor, mm-hmm. Working the best targets, some of the best targets that the world has to offer, working large maritime shipments of cocaine coming
Whoa.
Out of Colombia, being sent up to Central
like
America.
Pablo Escobar stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Caribbean. It was really fascinating work. And it's different. Obviously, you're speaking a foreign language, so that's difficult enough.
Yes.
But you really rely on your relationships with foreign counterparts in that office. You're kind of a hybrid agent because you're more of an intelligence gatherer, because we don't have some authorities that we have up here. We don't have the ability to do that because of laws and procedures in foreign countries. So we really have to rely on our counterparts to be the action element
mm-hmm.
For us in that environment. So I did that for a few years as a group supervisor, and then I took another lateral assignment with our Special Operations Division that's based out of Chantilly, Virginia, but I was still stationed down in Bogota, Colombia. What I did there was I basically coordinated large-scale investigations throughout the world. So maybe I'm supporting a case down in Bogota, Colombia that ties into Dallas, Texas, or St. Louis, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
or Chicago, Illinois.
Mm.
There may be links to Australia or offices in Europe. I bring all those parties together to make sure everybody's up to speed with the overall criminal drug network that we are trying to investigate, not just specific targets, but the overall network.
The overall network.
And then I did that for almost 2 years. And then in 2021, February 2021, I was selected for my current position as Assistant Special Agent in charge of the St. Louis Field Division, St. Louis Division Office. I got up here in April of 2021, and I am basically responsible for overseeing 8 DEA enforcement groups of agents and task force officers, which are local police officers deputized as DEA agents. They have the same authorities to conduct drug investigations and enforce federal drug laws and statutes.
Yeah.
So I supervise 8 of those groups currently. I have 7 in the Chicago, in the St. Louis area, and I have 1 down in Cape Girardeau, Missouri as well. So that's my current job. I also am the commander of our OSIDF strike force that sits out at another location here, where it's a mix of law enforcement agencies from several federal, state, and local agencies. And I also oversee our special response team, which is basically the federal DEA equivalent of a SWAT team.
Wow.
So
basically tons of free time.
Yeah, all the time.
Describing.
Yeah, I need a few more titles and a few more duties.
Right, exactly. You need a few more letters behind your name. So you have, I think, really eloquently kind of described your kind of path, and you've touched on a lot of different things that the DEA does,
right?
And so when we sort of met before the podcast, so I could kind of, take some notes and think a little bit about questions I wanted to ask, one of the things that I wrote down, and I know this is, on the website, is that you all disrupt, dismantle, and destroy organizations. That is what you do, right?
Correct.
As I said at the beginning, there's a lot of, I think, questions about what it is that DEA's role is, what it's not, but that really is your charge, right?
Right.
Disrupting, dismantling, and destroying criminal organizations.
Correct.
And specifically that have a tie to drugs.
Correct.
Right? Okay.
Yep. And that's always what we look to do in our investigations. That's what I've always looked to do. All the spots I just talked about throughout my career, that's something we always do. Sometimes our cases start with 5 members of an organization that we have identified. Sometimes, depending on what intelligence we're operating off of, sometimes it's only 1 target. Then it's up to us as investigators to try to spread that investigation and take it as far as it can go so we can dismantle. And you said you use the same verbs I would say, dismantle, destroy, disrupt. We use other terms in foreign offices like investigate, indict, extradite, but we're talking about the biggest targets, whether it's foreign or domestic. It's our job, it's DEA's job to go after those criminal drug networks. And
so you are not, I think just to be pretty clear here, the DEA's job is not to go after my cousin that sells some weed.
No.
Right.
DEA is not charged with investigating drug users. We are targeting drug dealers, drug distributors, suppliers.
You kind of want the person who's selling his person's person, the weed, to sell.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the information that I give my supervisors to tell their agents what I want them to work on, how I want them to view their investigations is, sometimes they'll start a case from a local impact. Let's say somewhere in a St. Louis area neighborhood. Start with that. Well, the next would be more of a regional approach. So that would be the St. Louis metro area maybe touching into southern Illinois. From there, it goes to a national perspective where maybe you ID that a supplier is out in California or Texas.
Then you're looking at
work with another DEA office
and
let's target those people with another DEA office or another law enforcement agency. And then the end all be all is if we can tie a target back to a source country such as Mexico or Colombia, that's the ultimate goal because that's when we're getting to our priority targets that we continue to chase on a daily basis.
So earlier you had said that you've kind of seen things evolve, right? And so now sometimes you rely on some of your staff to sort of fill you in on certain things. And when I first joined Prevent Ed, which was then NCADA, I came on specifically to work with methamphetamine prevention.
Right.
And at that point in time, there were some super labs, but it was primarily, people purchasing items in their local stores and making it in their homes or a mobile meth lab or something. Well, yes, methamphetamine still is around and it's definitely morphed into super labs and But really what we're paying a lot of attention to, what you're paying a lot of attention to, is fentanyl, right?
Correct.
And so I know that there's been some major successes that you all have had. One case in particular, I know that you all are doing a lot of work with the One Pill Can Kill campaign. So I'm wondering if we could just like talk briefly for those people listening who don't even really understand what fentanyl is and what makes the fentanyl you're looking to tackle different than what is maybe prescribed because somebody's in pain and, you know. So talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
So when we talk about fentanyl, we're talking about illegal fentanyl, not used for medicinal purposes for pain relief in a hospital setting. The easiest way for me to say it right from the get-go is fentanyl is 50 times stronger than heroin, and it's 100 times stronger than morphine. I think that would put it in perspective for people that either know drugs or other things that are used for pain treatment in a hospital setting. So fentanyl is a very dangerous drug, very dangerous substance, and methamphetamine still right up there. Those are our two biggest threats in the St. Louis area.
And
probably
think meth has gone away.
And it hasn't.
Right.
We seized records amount of both fentanyl and crystal meth last year in the St. Louis division office, which covers Missouri, Kansas, and Southern Illinois. We seized 188 kilograms of fentanyl in those locations. The two previous years combined, we seized 186. So
Whoa.
We seized more this year than we did the two previous years combined. We seized 186 in those 2 years, 188 this year.
Wow.
Same thing with meth. We set a record with over 1,800 kilograms of methamphetamine seized. So meth, we're seeing methamphetamine in large quantity still. It remains our one major threat. Fentanyl would be like 1A, 1B, like as far as because it's more, it's even more of a public safety and a public threat because people don't know about it or fentanyl is being mixed with other substances.
That's a huge issue. Just getting meth, and I'm using that in quotes, but really your meth could be laced with fentanyl and or cocaine, right? I mean, we see people who use cocaine on the weekends recreationally who are dying because it's adulterated with fentanyl and they were just looking for a little hit of energy and instead they're dead.
We've seen meth mixed with heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine.
Oh, fentanyl mixed with those things?
Fentanyl mixed with all those. And even there's been a few cases where it's been mixed with marijuana too, which people wouldn't think about that. But there's
And they don't want to hear it because, and I think people are reluctant to say it because you don't want to go back to the situation where it's like reefer madness. Like, don't, you know, use cannabis because it's tainted with things. But it actually is.
Right.
Right. And so how do you get the message out without being that person that is just like, you know, kind of hysterically crying out to people like, don't do drugs, but also like, there are dangers.
Yep.
Let's be smart about this.
Yeah, I mean, we've got data to back it up
right.
from our investigations, from lab analysis, from the investigations that we conduct. You know, coordination with the CDC, getting these numbers. I mean, when we're talking about fentanyl, there's a couple different threats. You've got regular fentanyl powder, which is being mass produced in places such as in Mexico by criminal drug networks down there. The precursor chemicals that are used to make fentanyl are being moved from China to Mexico, mostly unregulated, and the criminal drug networks down there are mass-producing fentanyl in record quantities, which makes it so dangerous. It's different. Crystal meth and fentanyl are different from drug threats of the past. When you talk about cocaine and heroin, there's still threats, drug threats in the United States and in St. Louis. But the big thing and big difference between those and what I would call man-made substances that can be mass-produced, such as fentanyl and crystal meth, is those came from plants, such as the opium poppy for heroin and the coca plant for cocaine, which have to go through seasons of crops and fields and production and manufacturing. With fentanyl and crystal methamphetamine, there's no stop in production or manufacturing.
That is so – I've never heard anybody say that before, but it actually makes sense. I mean, when you're manufacturing in a lab, you can control all of different variables, and once you figure out how to control for those variables – nothing is going to stop you or slow you down.
Right.
Certainly not rain or a poor harvest.
Yep.
Interesting.
So we see threats in the powder. Hmm. We see threats where it's being put into counterfeit pills that are also being produced and manufactured in Mexico by these networks. And people think they're getting a legitimate prescription pill, but they're not. They're getting a pill that contain a lethal dose of fentanyl or a fatal dose, which is only 2 milligrams. is considered a lethal dose, and that's a very small amount. When we're talking about, that's the equivalent of 10 to 20 grains of salt. I've tried to do that with a salt shaker and pour 10 to 20 grains. I can't.
No.
It always ends up as 40. I'm like, well, that's enough to kill how many people?
And so that's really why the DEA has come out with this one pill can kill, especially because there was a couple, one in particular, like high-profile death of a teenager who was looking to purchase a prescription pill using social media, correct? And did not get what they wanted, did not get what they thought, and instead got a pill that had been manufactured and contained fentanyl and killed this kid, correct?
Yeah, and that's a huge risk. Kids,
and it was like they thought they were getting Adderall or
exactly.
something totally different.
And if to the untrained eye, and even if I look at two pills without kind of maybe touching them, which I wouldn't do if we think fentanyl involved.
Yeah, I have no idea. When I go on your website and I look at the two pictures side by side, I'm like, I have no idea these are different.
Yeah, they have the same markings. The only indicator that I can really see, because I've been doing this for 18 years and being trained up on this stuff, is sometimes the fake counterfeit pills will start breaking apart over time, whereas the other ones will stay completely together.
Interesting.
And the big thing is, right, if you're talking about yourself in your household or with kids in your household, the big indicator is those pills, if they're for pharmaceutical use, prescribed by a doctor or a medical professional, they should probably be in a bottle with your name on it.
That's
being
correct.
Used for a specific thing.
Which is a great segue to the Take Back program. So every April and every October, the DEA sponsors a Drug Take Back Day.
Correct.
Can you talk a little bit about what that is and what's the purpose of that day? Those days, I should say.
The Drug Take Back is a great event that's handled by offices throughout the country in coordination with state, local, and local law enforcement officers. We have drop sites where people can bring unused prescription medication. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, you know, prescription pills like Adderall, Percocet, oxycodone, hydrocodone, stuff that you would get after getting your wisdom teeth pulled or a surgery, or if your kid has a football injury in high school. Those prescriptions run out. Sometimes they're not used. Instead of having those medicines stay in your cabinet, we host the Take Back twice a year where we have people anonymously bring pills to locations, to drop sites, in order to turn those pills in so nobody can potentially be affected by using a pill that they shouldn't be putting in their body.
And that's really diversion, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's a huge part of what you all do. Another part, and this is the last thing that I really want to make sure that we get to, is that over the last several years, beginning really with the DEA 360 strategy, which was mentioned on a previous episode, because one of our community coalitions, that's really when they got into this game, so to speak, is because of the DEA 360 strategy, where the DEA said, look, we need to remain focused on diversion.
Yep.
We want to dismantle these criminal organizations. And we know that it takes a community to do this. And how can we really lend us the resources and the manpower, the people power we have to kind of, I'll say, legitimize some of these things, right? And so that's really where our work with the DEA kind of like accelerated was through DEA 360. But there's now sort of a new version of that kind of, right, with some additional outreach and community efforts. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Correct. So with what we're doing now, especially the last few years, it started with what you just discussed with the 360 strategy. I think you could also put that in coordination with the One Pill Can Kill campaign.
I agree.
And what we're doing on a new strategy called Operation Overdrive that our administrator just announced a few weeks ago, and it was announced locally. It's basically an overdose and violence reduction initiative, trying to target the most violent offenders in certain neighborhoods in 34 cities throughout 23 states across the country. So people committing acts of violence, drug-related violence, gun violence, and attributing to an increase in overdose-related deaths, whether that's because of, you know, fentanyl or other opioids or other drugs. Obviously, DEA is an enforcement agency. That's what we do. We target the biggest, baddest offenders that are wreaking the most havoc in our neighborhoods and putting poison on the streets. Another avenue of that is we coordinate with state and local law enforcement officers to assist us with these law enforcement operations, but we also engage with community members, whether that's through schools, organizations such as Prevent Ed, community members, clergymen, parents, getting the message out there about the dangers of drug abuse so people know what can be the possible effects of drug abuse and related
violence.
And this
isn't really new because you all, like, a lot of people listening are familiar with Red Ribbon because it's a day that they get to wear a red shirt to school.
Right.
But what I don't think a lot of people know is that Red Ribbon was started by the DEA to honor an agent who was killed. And so y'all realized that we need to do more earlier upstream and that maybe you're not always the ones to do it, but that you can partner and elevate voices of organizations like mine that we can reach kids as well. And so I think that I appreciate you coming here today to just talk a little bit about the things that you are currently doing to get the drugs off the streets, but also the things that you have always done.
Right.
Right. I mean, Take Back's been around for a long time. Right. Red Ribbon's been around since the 80s. Like, this is not new here.
Right. And that's a big message I'd like to get across here is obviously the majority of the time when we go to arrest people, we're there on people's worst day, right? Where they're arresting people, taking them away from their families, potentially going to prison. It's also, we're also there trying to make those communities better and safer. There's, you know, in my career, there's always been drug abuse. There's been drug distribution. It's always been a problem. And we're trying to do what we can to clean up the streets, make these communities safer and healthier. And that's a big part of what we try to do is to make these communities better.
Well, you have a standing invitation. Anytime you want to talk about something that y'all are really excited about, a new operation that you have, really, I appreciate you coming. I appreciate everything that you do and that you're trying to do. No. So thank you very much.
And I would say likewise to you. I appreciate everything that Prevent Ed does and so many other community members and organizations that DEA deals with. It really makes our job a lot easier being able to do what we do and get our message out there.
Well, thank you so much. If you liked this conversation with ASAC Colin and you want more, you want to say, yes, I want to hear more about what they're doing, please consider rating, reviewing, and subscribing. Thank you so much. And we'll see you again really soon.
Thanks for joining us at The Preventable, brought to you ad-free by Prevent Ed. Prevent Ed works to reduce or prevent the harms of alcohol and other drug use through education, intervention, and advocacy. Please visit their website at PreventEd.org. Like what you heard? Rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date with what we are serving on The Preventable.